You're listening to the Psychedelic Invest podcast, where we speak with founders, CEOs, investors, advisors, experts, and thought leaders in the brave new world of psychedelics and entheogenic medicines. Brought to you by Psychedelic Invest, bringing you unparalleled psychedelic investing data and analysis. Psychedelic Invest is the industry's leading resource for those looking to invest in the burgeoning psychedelic industry. For more information and to access all of the podcast episodes, check out our website at psychedelicinvest.com/podcast. And now, here's the host of the Psychedelic Invest podcast, Bruce Eckfeld.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Psychedelic Invest podcast. I'm Bruce Eckfeld. I'm your host. Our guest today is Alex Atwood. Alex is an entrepreneur. He's also an organizational well-being coach who looks at psychedelics as a modality, helping companies, helping individuals, helping leaders really kind of figure out their purpose, figure out where they're going to go, how to elevate their not only their leadership, but really themselves. So we're going to talk about that. Lots of different kind of angles here. I'm fascinated by people who are actually using psychedelics in practice with people, helping them actually with change, with awareness, figuring out what they want to be, how they're going to do that, and really find breakthroughs. So excited for this conversation. With all that, Alex, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Very excited to be here. Thank you for the introduction.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. Before we get into everything you're doing today in the world of psychedelics, we'd love to kind of get a little bit of background. How did you get into the organizational space? How did you become an entrepreneur? Give us a little bit of your backstory and kind of got you to here and working with psychedelics today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I came out of the university in the late 1990s, come from a background of staffing entrepreneurs. So my mother, my father, they met when she was working as a temp for Manpower, where he was the regional manager. They got married. My family came from Iran and invested money into a staffing business for my mother and my father. So they started in that industry, and then my grandfather started there, and then there was a divorce, and everybody in the family at one point or another had a staffing company.
Yeah.
So when I graduated in the late 90s, I said, okay, I guess I'll go into staffing. And so I did that, worked for the family business for a little while, mm-hmm. worked for other organizations that provided, you know, different types of human resources, types of support. And then that entrepreneurial bug caught me. And so I started my first staffing company in 2001. I started a training center for hospitality. My staffing company was centered in the hospitality industry.
Okay.
So I started a training center in Washington, right outside of Washington, D.C., in 2008. And then most recently, I've started a gig platform, sort of tangential to the staffing industry. Things are starting to move in a direction that gives more transparency and marketplace. So I started a software company in 2018. And all along the way, I've been evolving, not just as a business person and as a professional, but as a human being. And so as I evolve and learn more about myself and how I show up in the world and how I show up to others, I started to do some coaching, you know, in the early, what do they call them? The aughts, the 2000, I don't even know what that called anymore, but
yeah, exactly.
I started to do some business coaching and realized pretty quickly that you can't separate the business from the individual. And so that's where my interest started to grow in terms of, well, who am I, you know, in terms of to the world? What's my purpose? And so that inevitably led into my first experience with psychedelics and then sort of grew into what I do now, which is I'm a proponent of psychedelics and I look to use different types of methods, not always psychedelics, but a lot of the times I find that to be a very powerful method in terms of transformation.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, going from, you know, kind of being an employee or being, you know, a member of a team running a staffing company, having your own staffing company, what's been the kind of thread for you that has connected these things that now kind of is in the psychedelic space? Like where do you find kind of a purpose or your kind of mission in each one of these kind of phases of your professional development?
Yeah. So I think what my purpose was, it sort of showed up early on. I remember it might have been in grade school. I'm sure it was in grade school. And I enjoyed, so much enjoyed matchmaking, not romantic matchmaking, in grade school, but I went to several different elementary schools and they were all in the same region. And so what I really enjoyed was introducing my friends to other people from other neighborhoods, other regions, other schools, and then seeing friendships develop, seeing people help each other. I remember we were working on a project at one point. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something in the neighborhood. We were putting together some sort of fort. And I knew that people from another neighborhood would be fast friends with my, with my two neighbors. So I brought them in. We all built a fort together. It felt really good. There was something really nourishing in me being able to introduce one person to another group of people, have them become, close friends, and then for them to build and sort of collaborate, whatever that looked like. When you're kids, it's like, everyone's just having fun and you just feel good about connecting people.
Yeah.
And so that has sort of manifested itself into my career because, in essence, that's what I was doing. I was supporting people on two ends of the business model. On one end, I was able to lift people up specifically because, the majority of the people that worked in my staffing companies were from all sorts of different regions and all sorts of different salary levels. I mean, we would put people, to work as dishwashers, and this might have been their first job, or, they may have, been coming through some sort of program where they really wanted to find stability. So I was able to provide that on one end. And then on the other end, of course, you're helping employers to be able to meet their needs and plugging people in, hopefully into company cultures that are healthy. Although when I first started, it's a lot different than it was now.
Yeah.
But I always found my purpose was just in supporting and sort of matchmaking and putting people in a position where they can be successful, and then seeing that come to fruition through like a long-term employment or somebody, I would have early on, I'd have people that I, started in their first jobs, whether they first came into the country or what have you. And I would always get, visits, stop-bys, text messages. Hey, I just want to let you know that, I'm now a manager at this particular place and they're wanting to promote me. And thanks so much for the opportunity you gave me. And so that's just such a feeling of it's just such a good feeling. Just feel like complete and you feel very nourished by that. So that's sort of my purpose. And that's where I, wanted to start a school for people to learn, not just, it started with not just technical skills, like in terms of the culinary end of things or how to do something, but what they used to call with the soft skills. Like, how do you relate to people you work with? What happens when you inevitably find yourself in conflict? And what about anxiety? And I didn't really know how to answer those questions, halfway through my career. I always sort of bought into the no pain, no gain, right? Like, you got to go through the fire. There was a saying, the fires of a man are tempered by the steels of adversity. I remember hearing that in an NFL game. And I said, wow, that's awesome. Like, you got to run through fire, right? And so that takes no, inventory of what that fire, the damage it's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so, you run through the fire. Sure, you get to whatever. You pull the sword out of the stone. Okay, got it. Now what? Like, are you burned?
Yeah.
What's happened to everybody around you as you've been pulling this out? And I think as I started to identify more with what my needs were, I started to see that this sort of mentality was not healthy in the long term, physically, mentally, or spiritually.
Yeah. I'm curious, what do you think is the kind of skill you have or kind of the superpower you have that allows you to kind of see those opportunities in people? Is there something you look for or something you identify that allows you to say, okay, I think this person and this person could really work well together, or there's an opportunity from the collaborator? How do you do that matchmaking?
Well, I think it's like a listening, but it's not a listening just using your ears and hearing. It's a listening for who somebody is or how they could be served well. So it takes really getting to know someone. I mean, you can call it empathy, but empathy may not be the right word in every situation because, getting to know someone, really understanding, who they are outside of what they say has been something I think early on, I just had that sort of innate instinct. And I think everybody has that, honestly. You know, they say, I'm not sure what the percentage is, but there's some high percentage of communication that's nonverbal that happens.
Yeah.
And a very lower actually communicated verbally type of communication. And I think early on, I really kind of honed in on that. And I remember being able to understand, not based on what people's necessarily just their interests, but like who they were. Right. So early on, like you could have a couple friends and maybe they're into comic books. Oh, I'm going to, you know, introduce Sarah to Joey because they both like comics. Okay. Got it. But I also happen to know that Sarah has this, you know, has a very like playful, jovial, and, you know, and Joey, right,
yeah,
is more like, he's also playful, but I feel like there's just some sense that he would get along well, right?
Yeah.
Like they would like, I don't know what it is on it. I can't put my finger on it, but it's, I think it comes from just kind of being aware,
yeah,
of cues when you're meeting people and, you know, developing relationships, being able to settle into who those people are. And I think part of this came from the fact that I'm half Iranian. Half my family is from Iran. My grandparents didn't speak any English growing up. So I grew up bilingual, and my father had left early on when I was young. So I really grew up in this multicultural type of environment. And so I got to relate to people from different cultures just outside of just their language difference, but actually there's a lot deeper of a cultural affect in people. And so I think just kind of growing up in that environment and then going into a very diverse area and a diverse neighborhood with all sorts of different cultures and all sorts of different people that did all sorts of different things got me to identify the thread in between all of it, which, yeah, sure, you're from a different culture, you eat different foods and all that, but that's not who you are. That's just, you know, where you're from or, you know, what you're used to.
Yeah.
Right. So we had almost like a United Nations of friends growing up. I mean, literally my friends were like from all sorts of different cultural backgrounds, ethnicities. They came from all sorts of income levels, but they all got along so well. And we would play, you know, softball or wiffle ball together. And I don't know, it was just a good time. I think going back to who I am as a child is important to me. Like they say, your inner child.
Yeah.
And connecting there has really allowed me to be myself in ways that just wasn't available to me early in my career.
Yeah, no, I love it. So how did psychedelics come up for you? Like, what was your first kind of experience or, I guess, you know, personal experience? And then, you know, when did you start to see, hey, there's some potential here in helping do the work that I do with people and sort of seeing that opportunity and give us a little sense of the background there?
Yeah, so the first time I'd heard about any psychedelics was not in any sort of environment, you know, aside from very recreational. And I was always very scared. I had a lot of fear around psychedelics. And I remember people mentioning, I think it might have been way back in like middle school, there were kids who had said, you know, they had tried LSD and other kids had tried mushrooms. And, you know, and I just, to me, I'd grown up in the age of the videos that they would play, the Just Say No era of the 1980s. And you would see these videos probably produced in the 60s, maybe even the 50s. But they would show people who had taken psychedelics and lost their minds and jumped out of windows. And there was multiple campaigns about the, you know, the effects of psychedelics on the mind and the brain. And I remember there was the rumor was that, you know, if you do acid, it stays in your spinal cord for the rest of your life. There was all sorts of stuff that was going on back then. So I was terrified.
Yeah.
I was not trying that
at
all. And I had friends who did, and I said, you are crazy. Like, are you serious? Are you really doing this? Yeah. So that was when things, you know, my first sort of exposure, if you could call it that, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't really partake in that. It wasn't until 2018 that a good friend of mine that I'd known for about 10 years that I had known to be someone who was very much somebody who really cared about doing good for others. And he had sold a business when I'd first met him, and he devoted the majority of the proceeds towards starting all sorts of different organizations and nonprofits and ways to pay it forward. He had something called Daily Miracles, just cool stuff. So I liked him as a person. I liked what he was up to. And I hadn't heard from him in quite some time. And he reached out to me and mentioned that had I heard of this thing called ayahuasca. And and I had heard about it. It was like a tea of some sort that like I would never, ever even imagine drinking because it, you know, just wasn't, it just sounded scary.
Yeah.
But, you know, him and I had a conversation about it. And it was because of the way that he presented it to me as really a life-changing, transformational experience. He described DMT and how it was natural occurring to the brain, and it shows up when you're born and when you die. And mm-hmm. I was like, you know, that's really interesting. And at the time, this is 2018, 2017, 2016, I was really into like obstacle course types of things. There was something called a Tough Mudder.
Oh, yeah.
So I was into pushing sort of the boundaries, right? You know, I was, you know, getting older, wanted to, whether it was to reclaim my youth or whatever, I wanted to prove to myself that I could still, and I was still
at
the, I still got it, right? So my friends at the time were all signing up for all these different types of extreme types of activities, right? So I looked at this as, hey, this is another extreme activity I can take part in, right? Like, I'm game. And, hey, my buddy's, I like him a lot. I trust him. And he had just started this retreat experience. So I went on his first official retreat, second, like, he had done one before that was kind of a beta. And now this was his first big retreat. So I signed up, didn't know what I was getting into, was terrified. I immediately started listening to all sorts of podcasts and all sorts of news about, you know, what does this stuff do to you? And, you know, what can I expect? And it, like, everything I read made me terrified. I would read into the scariest aspect of it. And I remember going into it, I said, what am I doing? And when I sat in an ayahuasca ceremony, we actually had three ceremonies during this particular retreat. And it was challenging, but it wasn't what I expected. It was suddenly something rushed that was familiar to me. And the anxiety and all the considerations that I had seemed meaningless, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'll have to caveat this by saying about a year prior to this, I did something called the Landmark Forum, which was really my first sort of the key unlocking the door to what, you know, what's beyond and what possibilities there are.
Yeah.
So I was in that state when I, you know, went into the ayahuasca, you know, ceremony, the journey. So that really allowed me, it allowed things to be a lot more malleable. It had me see things in a way that I sort of knew these are the way things are, but all the clouded judgment and, you know, concerns and, you know, all the different social structures that I've like, you know, taken on my entire life started to fade a bit. Mm-hmm. And so then clarity showed up. And I realized a lot of the things I was dealing with, a lot of things I was struggling with, I was making them unnecessarily complex because of my own concerns. And and it was incredible. And I remember my friend and his partner who had started the retreats, they were both what you called, you know, type A personality types, entrepreneurs, had successful exits of their companies. And they were, you know, some of the people who were, quote unquote, the most successful in this group, outwardly successful, had the most trauma, just massive trauma. And there was, and realized that sort of walking through fire, whatever it is that they had to, you know, go through in order to get to where they are, what left, you know, a residue on them that was continuing. And so I saw this as, wow, this is extremely powerful. This is allowing people to really get beyond all these self-limiting beliefs, all of this, you know, past trauma that they don't even know they're holding on to. And this retreat also, what was unique about it is some of, you know, these business leaders and authors, and it was mainly, you know, type A sort of uber successful, whatever you call that in the business world, corporate world. So they would have workshops during the retreat. So they would connect what you were sort of learning about yourself and others with business sort of concepts, working with people, right? You know, what does hierarchical leadership look like versus a more open style of leadership, and connecting that to the new paradigm of business where things are moving so quickly, and adaptability and connectedness and new generations, the way that they view work is changing. This is before the pandemic, of course, right?
Yeah.
Things were already starting to accelerate in that direction. So it was almost like, wow, this is not only just a personal sort of experience and healing, but it's also informing me and others who might be in my position on how to treat others and how to better run their organizations and how to, you know, how to be better human beings and connect with people in deeper and more sustainable and meaningful ways. So at that point, you know, it's just like, wow, this is something, you know, with the work I had done at the Landmark Forum, combining with this and some other practices that I'd never really stayed consistent with, but I knew that had worked out, you would work well with these different tools. I thought, wow, you know, I really have a recipe here that I want to share with others. And now how do I do that?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, you have the psychedelics, which, you know, 2018, and what's remarkable is since 2018, just in the last, what, is this five, six years?
Yeah.
Oh my God. The psychedelic stigmatism has rapidly declined.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
It's fascinating. So in 2018, had you told people, hey, look, I went into the woods and drank, you know, psychedelic brew, right? Mm-hmm. They'd say, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. We get your type. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we got it. Hope you had a great time. Uh-huh. But as the years, and personally, I would tell people I was on a meditation retreat, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't tell people specifically in my corporate life what I was doing.
Yeah.
Because I thought I'd be judged and I was judging myself. But over time, some of the people that I met in that retreat and networks that I started to put together, I realized that they're some of the most inspiring and heart-led and successful business people, coaches, therapists, clinicians, they are all moving into this direction, psychedelics. And yes, there's still, of course, that stigmatism, and there's still a lot of hesitancy around that because of decades of prohibition and decades of messaging coming from different governments and different health organizations. But now that real research is happening and that people are actually experiencing this for themselves and saying, hey, look, my life is improving through my microdosing protocol with psilocybin, right? I'm starting to feel more. I'm starting to connect more with the people that I work with, that are in my family, with my friends, and myself, most importantly. And so when you imagine that, you have this natural entheogen, right, that is there, and you have an industry. And by the way, Big Pharma has done quite a bit for humanity as well. But to look at entheogens is not valid at all when they just cause so much healing.
Yeah.
And just looking at this one sort of man-made industry being pharmaceuticals and how they are incentivized by keeping people on these different medications. And frankly, I'd say probably 60% of the people that I'd been in my retreats with or that I work with have had some form of medicine in terms of for the majority of their lives. They found anxiety to be best satiated by different types of pharmaceuticals. So upon discovering this sort of natural remedy that doesn't require a lifelong commitment, it may not be good for business, but it's great for humanity,
yeah.
Right? And that's where the big shift happened.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know I'm going on a lot. So
no, it's good because I'd love to hear how this plays out, because everyone has just such a different story with their initial relationship or initial exposure and then how it kind of developed. So I guess what are the modalities you're working with now and who are you working with and who do you feel it really can benefit in terms of these kind of psychedelic tools, psychedelic experiences, and what do they really get out of it? Like what do psychedelics enable in terms of helping these leaders, helping these folks with kind of growth and evolving themselves?
Mm. Well, to answer your first question, other modalities that I work with, not all of the clients that I'm currently working with are ready for or necessarily interested in psychedelics. Yeah. So a lot of what I do is, you know, I work with my clients, you know, whether it's one-on-one or organizational, really to understand, you know, how I can support them, how I can have them discover within their own world, right, what it is that they can do to be able to achieve anything and to conquer any hurdle that they have. But what I'll see is, and inevitably, you run into roadblocks, you run into an edge, you run into some sort of self-limiting behavior, or, you know, frankly, just putting a routine in place, right? Like, meditation has been something that has been in the zeitgeist forever, since like the 60s, right? And it's caught on more. But getting people to actually daily sit in meditation for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, to do yoga regularly, it's, you know, having that become a routine is difficult. And there's breakthrough experiences that can be had. But where psychedelics start to show up is, well, this is something that's extremely tangible, right? People are used to taking medicines or used to taking something in order to feel better, whether it's a Tylenol, whether it's an aspirin, whether it's whatever it is. So this kind of falls into a routine that people can more easily pick up and stick with, right? And over a period of time, they find themselves starting to feel more into their breathing. You feel more into eating naturally. You start to want to take care of yourself in a different way, because the specifically the psilocybin provides a deep sense of somatic experience. You start to really feel into things that you're doing every day from your body. You start to relate to your anxiety in a different way, right? Yeah. Like it's actually a chosen path. So when I find that people that I may be working with are not really committing to routines, or they're finding a lot of difficulties being able to adapt themselves, or they're finding themselves in, you know, depression or anxiety and really can't find a way out.
Yeah.
This is where I look at, you know, bringing a psychedelic type of tool into the coaching.
Yeah.
It really does enhance the quality of life over a period of time. And there's so many different types of protocols. There's so many different types of psilocybin strains and all mm-hmm. sorts of different ways to be able to take on these medicines. And, you know, for a couple, for example, or for a group, for example, mm-hmm. I have a project I'm working on right now with a group. It's a psychedelic project. And a week and a half ago, we all put together a little 2-day midweek retreat where we put together a specific synthesis of psychedelics, created mm-hmm. an intention, went to a certain area, sat together, listened to very specific music, very specific types of vibration we created, and we came together. And the next day we had an incredible meeting of yeah. the minds. And there was all sorts of different little, you know, microaggressions happening and little egos showing up in this little group of four people. I mean, yeah. it was just anyone who's put together, you know, any sort of project, company, or anything knows that personalities and preferences and
oh, yeah.
all of that stuff, controlling, you know, types of behavior start to take place. That just through those couple of days, there was a really deep understanding between the four of us and many ideas and create. And so suddenly our project was reinvigorated. The team came together as, you know, a group of people unified for a purpose. We all became more grounded. So those are the type of things that happen through a macro experience, you know, a one-time psychedelic experience with intention yeah. in a setting that is curated and cultivated for a purpose.
Yeah.
So when you have those elements, it's incredible what can be achieved. So whether it's one-on-one or whether it's a group of people, you set an intention, you create a setting that the intention can then manifest itself in, and then you add psychedelics. And with those ingredients, more often than not, you'll find yourself in a position where ideas, possibilities show up.
Yeah. I'm curious, do you feel like you are a psychedelic coach or a coach that happens to use psychedelics?
Both. Okay. I would say I'm a psychedelic coach in the sense that I've been trained and understand how to properly administer psychedelics in a coaching type of setting. But I don't necessarily just specifically devote all of my practice to psychedelics currently, because there's others. Right now I work with some people in the university system and work with some business leaders that are not as familiar with psychedelics. And so in those type of circumstances, I want to meet my clients where they are. But I'm finding more and more that clients are coming to me who are specifically looking for psychedelic coaching and are specifically have already been exposed to the benefits of these medicines.
Yeah.
And I think it could be part of, I began my coaching before the stigma was sort of very strong.
Yeah.
And as I'm starting to see the stigmatism start to alleviate and start to fade,
yeah.
that more people are coming to me specifically around the psychedelics.
Yeah. Makes sense. Alex, it's been a pleasure. If people want to find out more about you, about the work that you do, what's the best way to get that information?
Yeah, so you can go to my website. It's alexatwood.co. That's one way to reach me. You can always email me at alex@alexatwood.co. And a couple of the projects I'm working on, I have a podcast called The Alchemist Lounge. You can listen to that on anywhere podcasts are played. We bring on lots of different guests. We discuss psychedelics and other topics all around well-being and health. And yeah, just I'm always up to something, so I'm looking forward to 2024.
Yeah,
that's exciting with lots of new possibilities and
awesome
and moving away from a lot of this trauma and, that's been happening over the course of the last year.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I'll make sure all the information and links and everything are in the show notes so people can get that. Alex, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
It was a pleasure, Bruce. I love the conversation.
Thank you for listening to the Psychedelic Invest podcast. If you liked this episode, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and leave us a review. You can find more episodes on all the major podcasting platforms and our website at psychedelicinvest.com/podcast.